The Tom Woods Show, episode 1348.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, Bob Murphy is going to have to be carried out on a stretcher after I am done with him aboard the 2019 Contra Cruise. We are debating pacifism. Bob in favor, me opposed, with Gene Epstein moderating. It's going to be a great time, but it's going to make my demolition of Michael Malice in the Hamilton debate look like a picnic. This debate is for Contra Cruisers only, so make sure and grab your cabin right away at ContraCruise.com for the libertarian event of the year. That's ContraCruise.com. Oh, and don't forget, bring some dark clothing for Bob's funeral. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Of course, you've heard me say all week long that I'm going to be giving you shorter episodes at the end of the week because I gave you more or less 3-hour-long episodes to start the week, and I don't want to throw you off with your podcast listening schedule. So yesterday I did a roughly half-hour episode, and that's supposed to be where I'm supposed to be, actually, is somewhere in that ballpark. So I had been thinking the last couple episodes would be 15, 20 minutes each, and I just can't stop talking. Well, today what I'm going to do is there's an article I've been wanting to respond to for a while. It's from last month, January 2019, from Alternet. And it's by an R.J. Eskow. And the name of the article is, "Here are 11 questions you should ask libertarians to see if they're hypocrites." All right. Well, what's this all about? So what I'm going to do in this episode, because obviously if I were to answer all 11 of these, this would take a long time. So I think I'm going to divide it up. I don't want to sound like I'm being a coward, by the way. I will answer all of them, but I want to divide it up so that my answers are of manageable length taken together. So we'll answer a few of them in this episode, and then I'll get to them again in the near future. So the idea of the article is that libertarians are hypocrites. Obviously, get that from the headline. And we encounter in here the usual level of comprehension of libertarian ideas, that is to say, not really any at all. There's not a single libertarian author who is cited. Obviously, take a wild guess. What's the one person whose name is mentioned in the article? Take a wild guess. Ready? Ayn Rand. What a surprise. Ayn Rand. Now, Ayn Rand has her merits, but I pretty much don't ever talk about Ayn Rand, and I'm able to be a completely intellectually fulfilled libertarian without ever talking about Ayn Rand. But when you don't know anything about who we are, but you've sort of heard that there's this woman, Ayn Rand, who wrote some best-selling novels, it's the lazy man's way out to just refer to Ayn Rand. But is there a Rothbard in here? And by the way, not like there wouldn't be controversial stuff for them to find in Rothbard, but they have to have heard of him first. So, all right. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to go through a few of the objections or the questions that are, of course, meant to intimidate us. And the first of them runs as follows. They say that libertarians often use the term spontaneous order as being the great insight of libertarian social analysis. I did an episode with the great Andrew Heaton on that not too long ago. And then they quote from the Cato Institute along these lines. Order in society arises spontaneously out of the actions of thousands or millions of individuals who coordinate their actions with those of others in order to achieve their purposes. Well, all right, that seems pretty unobjectionable. That is more or less the brute fact of social analysis. And they respond, to which the discerning reader might be tempted to ask, like where exactly? Libertarians define spontaneous order in a very narrow way. One that excludes demonstrations like the Arab Spring, elections which install progressive governments, or union movements, to name three examples. And yet each of these things are undertaken by individuals who, quote, coordinated their actions with those of others, unquote, to achieve our purposes. So our first hypocrisy test question is, are unions, political parties, elections, and social movements like Occupy examples of spontaneous order? And if not, why not? Well, I'll tell you why not. This is a category mistake. What is meant by spontaneous order is that people are voluntarily coming together for the purpose of creating something, but with the idea that all throughout that entire process, all throughout it, what you have is purely voluntary. There is no coercion involved. That's the insight. It's not a particular insight to say somebody could take a bullhorn and order people around and get them to do things. All right, that we knew already. The insight is that even without a bullhorn, people can come together voluntarily and accomplish things. So if you're going to say that elections are a form of spontaneous order, well, first of all, your ambitions are way too low, because we're talking about the ability to build a rocket ship or create a consumer good or build a fleet of automobiles or whatever. I mean, having an election, well, how hard is that? You get some paper and some pencils and some people. I mean, do you really need a theory of social organization to see how that would work? I mean, what would be impressive about that? Nobody would have trouble understanding how that could work. Whereas you would have trouble understanding how it's possible that something with so many inputs, like a car, or even in the classic case, a pencil, could actually be created, given all the specific knowledge that you need to have for each part of that process. The paint for the pencil, the rubber for the pencil, the rubber for the tires that go on the car that transports the stuff the pencil needs, the oil that needs to be extracted and refined to go into the car to transport the pencil parts, the graphite, which comes from very far away. I mean, all these sorts of things. There's no one person who could do this even if he wanted to, and yet somehow, spontaneously, it all happens. So an election, first of all, I mean, this is not the main reason it doesn't really qualify, but an election, what's the complex social phenomenon requiring explanation here? You got a bunch of people standing in a line, and they're ready with their little pencil to go over to their ballot. You really think that requires some kind of deep social theory? Whereas when you look at the market economy and the order that's in it, I mean, even a left winger has to admit there's extraordinary order in it. I mean, you can see that in your local grocery store or at a computer store. You can see the amazing order that's there. The things you need are there in the quantities you need at a reasonable price. I mean, these things happen without somebody with a bullhorn. That's the amazing thing about it. And that's what spontaneous order is all about. Now, of course, elections also likewise are leading to an institution that is not voluntary. It's leading to the creation of an institution or the approval of change in personnel to an institution that's involved in using coercion to reach its ends. So that's a category mistake. The whole point is spontaneous order shows how you can reach your ends without coercion. So to sit around and say, well, I mean, you know, governments, aren't they an example of spontaneous order? I'm trying to limit myself saying that's a dumb question. That's a question that shows you're not really even pausing for reflection. You're just finding one sentence that you found from one libertarian think tank, and you're so dying to smash it and prove that we need to be ruled over by our betters that you can't take 10 minutes to really reflect to see, could there be a nugget of insight here that I might draw something from? Now, as for labor unions, we'll get back to labor unions in a later question. But again, a bunch of people deciding to join an organization is so much lower than everything conceived of by spontaneous order. Spontaneous order is like how the English language came to be when there was nobody in charge of it. Saying to a bunch of people, hey, you guys, you want to start a union? And they all go, okay. You really need a big philosophical explanation with plenty of social analysis to explain that to you? I don't get that. If you want to call that spontaneous order, you could, if you felt like that was something that required explanation. Whereas I feel like the existence of English or the existence of an extraordinary global structure of production that no human mind can conceive of nevertheless got started with no coercion involved, or it could conceivably have been started with no coercion involved, I think that requires an explanation. Simply saying, hey, everybody, how would you guys like to try to earn higher wages? Yeah, that sounds good to me. All right, why don't you go sign this form? And they think, oh my gosh, why don't libertarians call this spontaneous order? Well, you know what? If it'll make you happy, I will. I don't see why that's such a big deal, or why that's surprising in any way, or why that would demand explanation. All right, let's now say something about labor unions, though, because that might seem like I was being a bit glib. So let's get into it. We read this. Retail stores like Walmart and fast food corporations like McDonald's cannot produce wealth without employees. Can you believe the insights of this person? They need employees, people. Don't those employees have the right to, quote, coordinate their actions with those of others in order to achieve their purposes, unquote? For example, in unions? You would think, I love you would think, you would think that free market philosophers would encourage workers as part of a free market economy to discover the market value for their services through negotiation. Huh, you would think, they say. You would think, but I guess they just don't. Well, actually, if you read the best-selling libertarian economics book of all time, so pardon me for digging out an obscure title like Economics in One Lesson, Henry Hazlitt says precisely this, that of course on the market economy you could have labor unions. And indeed, they can serve a purpose, as Murray Rothbard says. There can be employers that simply do not realize that they are paying below market wages. And when they realize that suddenly they can't get workers, well, this can help them to realize they've got to bump up their wage bids. There's no reason that you can't have a voluntary labor union on the free market. So you might think free market, yeah, well, they do. So why are you acting like that? Okay. So this again shows me that there's absolutely no engagement going on with libertarians at all. You can't even bother to read Henry Hazlitt, the book that's sold millions of copies. It's not even that long. And I mean, it's called Economics in One Lesson. So we're not exactly talking about a PhD dissertation here, but nothing. I might add, though, that the point is the labor union voluntary or coercive? If it's coercive, then again, we forfeit the idea that you could apply to it the concept of spontaneous order. Because again, this is a category mistake. What is the idea of spontaneous order? The idea behind spontaneous is that it doesn't require central direction and that it's voluntary, that people just make decisions voluntarily to go ahead and do something. And the idea behind spontaneous order is that it's all peaceful. That was the great libertarian social insight, is that you can have peaceful resolutions. You can have a peaceful outcome. You can have a peaceful approach to creating amazing things. But when you look at the privileges labor unions have, they're anything but peaceful. And in my book, 33 Questions About American History You're Not Supposed to Ask, there's a pretty substantial chapter that goes through and lists all these various privileges that do involve the initiation of force. And that's not what we're talking about when we talk about spontaneous order. Again, accomplishing something through force requires no social theory. It's easy to see how it comes about. If you clock somebody over the head and then get what you want, nobody needs to write a dissertation about how that was possible. Whereas if you have a global division of labor producing an extraordinary array of consumer goods with an amazing latticework of capital goods stages, that does require explanation. How the heck did that happen without any single human being or any single committee coordinating the whole thing? So let me just read one little passage from Edward Chamberlain, who was a professor at Harvard University, describing the unique legal status that labor unions have enjoyed. And you'll see why, therefore, this does not qualify as spontaneous order, because necessarily the way they operate is through violence. He says, if A is bargaining with B over the sale of his house, and if A were given the privileges of a modern labor union, he would be able, one, to conspire with all other owners of houses not to make any alternative offer to B, using violence or the threat of violence if necessary to prevent them, two, to deprive B himself of access to any alternative offers, three, to surround the house of B and cut off all deliveries, including food, except by parcel post, four, to stop all movement from B's house so that if he were, for instance, a doctor, he could not sell his services and make a living, and five, to institute a boycott of B's business. All of these privileges, if he were capable of carrying them out, would no doubt strengthen A's position, but they would not be regarded by anyone as part of bargaining unless A were a labor union. And Hayek, F.A. Hayek said, we have now reached a state where unions have become uniquely privileged institutions to which the general rules of law do not apply. So if you're making threats of violence or engaged in violence, that's not what libertarians think of as spontaneous order, because it's not something in need. It's not something that is awe-inspiring. How did this happen? As I say, like the International Division of Labor, that is the most amazing social phenomenon ever. And it is amazing, and you do wonder how it happens. Well, gee, how did these labor unions keep those non-labor workers out? Well, let's see. They beat seven of them to a bloody pulp in front of everybody else. They burned one of their houses down, all of which has happened in American history. They threw, brick bats at them, whatever it is. That would be a phenomenon that you would not in a million years feel like required a whole new approach to social analysis to understand. We're interested in understanding how voluntary interaction brings about extraordinary outcomes. That's what the term means. All right, let's go into one more of these, and then we'll wrap it up for today in keeping with my determination to keep this episode not too long. And then we'll return to this article in the future. Of course, the article itself, as you would expect, I will link to at tomwoods.com/1348. So here's what we also read. Our democratic process is highly flawed today, but that's largely the result of corruption from corporate and billionaire money. And yet, libertarians celebrate the corrupting influence of big money. No wonder, since the same money is keeping their movement afloat and paying many of their salaries. But aside from the naked self-interest, their position makes no sense. Why isn't a democratically elected government the ultimate demonstration of spontaneous order? And then, does our libertarian recognize that democracy is a form of marketplace? All right. Well, first of all, I see no evidence of any libertarians celebrating the corrupting influence of big money. We respond to that by saying if you are tired of the corrupting influence of big money, then stop having such a large state in the first place and stop having a state that can basically make or break any particular private firm or industry. Stop having a state that has the kind of power that somebody would want to spend money to influence. That's the only non-naive way to deal with it. It's kind of like the way Frank Chodorov dealt with the problem of communists in government jobs. He says, get rid of the jobs. You know, some people are trying to get the communists out. Just get the jobs out. That's the problem. So that's just a made-up fantasy. No libertarian says anything like we're celebrating the corrupting influence of big money. No, it's we fully expect there to be that corrupting influence when you have a state. Why would there not be? So why isn't a democratically elected government the ultimate demonstration of spontaneous order? Well, again, we see it's a category mistake because we're not asking how do coercive institutions come into existence? That's a separate question. What we're asking is how is it possible that order can come about without central direction? That's what the spontaneous in spontaneous order is about. If you have a state, and I don't care if it's democratically elected or not, some people rule and other people are ruled. I mean, get the fantasy notions out of your head. Some people rule and other people are ruled, and it's backed by violence. Well, I don't need some, maybe we do need some kind of social theory to account for why people accept this. And libertarians have plenty of that, plenty of speculation about why people accept this system. But in terms of, I'm in awe, I have no idea how it would come about. No, I mean, you can make people do a lot of things if you have physical force behind you. The question that spontaneous order is trying to answer is how does order come about without the use of coercive force? That's the question. How do we get order spontaneously? And by spontaneously, they really mean voluntary order, that a kind of order that comes about without anybody coercing or threatening anybody. The state is coercion and threats at its root. If you doubt that, start ignoring its mandates, and you'll see what I mean. So again, this is not a question. This has nothing to do with spontaneous order. That's why. So why isn't a democratically elected government the ultimate demonstration of spontaneous order? Because that's not what the term means. The term is talking about voluntary institutions, voluntary phenomena, non-coercive phenomena. How does order come about without coercion? That was the great insight that libertarians had. And then does our libertarian recognize that democracy is a form of marketplace? No, we do not. If it is a form of marketplace, it's an extremely attenuated one. So for example, in the free market economy, it doesn't matter if nobody else likes the music I listen to. I mean, you know, some of my listeners, some of you guys make fun of me for the music I like, but I can just take that in stride because I know that even if a lot of you don't like it, it'll still get made because there are enough people like me. We may be a tiny minority, but somebody will cater to us and somebody will produce it and somebody will make it available for me to purchase. I don't have to worry about that. Or if there's a particular kind of furniture that I like that you don't like, I can still get it. I can still get that kind of, whatever it is, I can still get it. Whereas if there's a democratic election about music, then 51% of you get the music you want and the 49% get nothing. They don't get anything. That's how democracy works. So we have two candidates. One gets elected, one doesn't. The people who voted for the one who gets elected get what they want, and the people who voted for the other one get nothing. Whereas in a market economy, people who vote for popular music get their popular music, and people who vote for progressive rock get their progressive rock. Everybody gets, you get what you want. So yeah, I mean, if you want to make democracy into a form of marketplace, I guess you could force it into that, but why would you? It's so different in everything that matters. Also, you get immediate results with a market economy. I go out and I buy a television, I immediately have it. I immediately have it. And so the connection between my purchasing it and my having it in my possession is direct and immediate. And therefore, I tend to research it. I look into what's the best model, what's the best price, where should I go to get it. I research it. I make a wise decision about how to spend my money. Whereas a democratic vote, which costs me nothing except a few minutes of my time, and has no immediate results. I don't walk out of there with the exact policies that I favored being instantly implemented. So that I feel the consequences, as I do with a bad TV purchase I might have made. So I have much less incentive to do a lot of good research, and I might just go in there and vote because somebody had a nice sign in his yard. Or I like the way the person looks or something. I would never make a television decision on that basis. Oh, I like the way the box looks. Would never do that because my money's on the line and I have to immediately live with the consequences. And then also I know exactly what I'm getting with a television. Whereas in democracy, I could vote for somebody who then does the opposite of everything that was promised. How do I know? Or maybe I've got a candidate, I like a few things from this person, a few things from that person. I can't do that. Whereas if I have a couple of products and one has a few features I like, another has a few features I like, well, I could get them both and use each one for the features I like. Can't do that in democracy. So yeah, if you want to say, if you really, really want to use that language, democracy could be an extremely, vastly, almost embarrassingly inferior kind of marketplace, if that makes you feel better. All right. TomWoods.com/1348 is where this article will be linked. I'm going to return to this in future episodes. Maybe not the very next one. I haven't decided yet, but I will get back to this very soon. In the meantime, if you like this stuff, if you're cheering for this stuff, if you appreciate what I'm doing, then listen to that little voice in your head that says, you belong in the Tom Woods Show elite. And you can get there. That's my private group. I have many, many benefits that come from helping me out. You get transcripts of all the interviews I do. You get discount coupons on libertarian retailers, autographed and personalized books, courses, lots of fun stuff. So do please, if you like what I'm doing, you appreciate it, it resonates with you, join me in the Tom Woods Show Elite and interact with me, or just go over there and join anyway, even if you don't want to interact with me. Where to go? SupportingListeners.com. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.